The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
Jimmy Carter, Nobel Peace Prize winner, 39th President of the United States. He's also the author of several books, including last year's White House Diary, and now the subject of a new children's book called Gift of Peace, The Jimmy Carter Story. I spoke to President Carter yesterday, and I started the conversation by reading an excerpt from his book, White House Diary, which is now out on paperback. Carter writes this, "I'm convinced that one reason we accomplished so many of our goals was that I assumed personal responsibility for key proposals to the Congress. Most major bills were drafted either in the White House or by my cabinet officers. And that doesn't seem to be the strategy of the Obama White House." I asked President Carter whether he thinks that current strategy of the White House is a mistake.
I think it's a mistake just because I prefer it the other way. But, you know, I can't criticize a different president who does it a different way. But that's the way I served as governor, and that's the way I served as president. Whenever we had any important legislation concerning human rights or energy or whatever, we drafted the legislation inside the White House. And I would invite the chairman of the different congressional committees or their top staff members to come and participate in the drafting itself. So by the time the legislation got to the Congress, it was what I proposed. And then, of course, sometimes the Congress would amend it to some degree, almost always to some degree. If they amended it too much, then I would threaten or actually carry out a veto. But I think that in the case of the energy legislation, for instance, which hasn't ever come forward, in the case of health care, what happened was that five different committees wrote five different versions of the health care bill, and then ultimately they reached the lowest common denominator. But so if it's just a different way of governing, and the way I did, I think, was proved to be successful. It made me and the members of the Congress be pretty much partners in the shaping of legislation. So there was not an adversarial role from the very beginning. But whether or not the Republicans would cooperate in these days with President Obama is difficult to say.
And that's a good question. I mean, certainly you were a one-term president. The GOP has quite vocally said that their goal, members of the GOP have said their number one goal is to make President Obama a one-term president.
Yeah, I watched a minority leader in the Senate say that.
You know, I'm wondering what your advice then would be to Barack Obama going into this election. You've written that there were things that you feel that you could have done to change that second election. Is there anything that you think Barack Obama can do right now?
Well, you know, I wouldn't want to propose, you know, I wouldn't want to be presumptuous and recommend actions by a president. But I think, for instance, when the legislation is going to come up in the future on how to deal with our terrible indebtedness, I think that the best approach would be for President Obama to draft what he thinks is a superlative approach to the whole thing, quite definitive in nature, with a combination of expenditures and also increased receipts, and then take that proposal, which would be his, directed to the people and try to convince the people, both Democrats and Republicans, this is the best approach. And that's basically what I tried to do when I was president, was present my own ideas in totality to the people, and I sold it as best I could to the general public and then prevailed on the Congress that way. I think that's what would be the best approach to this particular issue of indebtedness and bringing us out of our financial problems and also to the job issue as well.
We're speaking with President Jimmy Carter, of course. The new book is called Gift of Peace, The Jimmy Carter Story. And the Jimmy Carter story, very much about, as a president, is very much about the Middle East, the Camp David Accords, the revolt in Iran, the Iraq's invasion of Iran, which occurred not long before you went into a reelection campaign. And I'm wondering, what are the roots, perhaps, of the Arab Spring that we're witnessing today? Were the roots or the stirrings of the Arab Spring already there when you were in the White House?
No, I don't believe that it were. You know, when I went into the White House, nobody was urging me to take the initiative on bringing peace between Israel and Egypt. There had been four major wars between those two countries in the preceding 25 years. And I took it on myself to do it with a lot of help, really, from every source. And then I prepared what I thought was a comprehensive peace proposal, got both Begin and Sadat to come to Camp David, and eventually sold it to them. They were two very courageous men who were willing to stand up to some disapproval within their own countries. In fact, Sadat was assassinated because of his political courage. But I think that's what needs to be done. I would hope now, as we approach September, when the Palestinians are thinking about asking the General Assembly of the United Nations really to approve them as a state, that the international quartet led by the United States would put forward a comprehensive peace proposal based on the 1967 borders, which President Obama has already adopted, and then set it not only to the general public, to the General Assembly, and to the United Nations, but also set it to the Israelis and the Palestinians. I think that's always the best approach for the president to take the initiative, be a bold leader, prepare a comprehensive proposal, and using the so-called bully pulpit of the White House, take it to the general public and sell it on its own merits.
We're speaking with President Jimmy Carter. Last question for you, Mr. President. I'm often very frustrated, as our listeners are, with what's going on in Washington.
So I know.
How do we, an average American citizen, turn that frustration into action and do something to change the political atmosphere?
Well, I think quite often you can do it with your own activities. You have a great pulpit of your own, or just expressing your views on any sort of public media, including the one on which we're talking. And I think to marshal people who feel the same way you do, get involved in political campaigns for members of Congress or for others in your district or perhaps in the state, and then make sure that those candidates' positions, which would ultimately wind up in Washington or the state capital, mirror as best you can, as best possible, your own views. And I think those views are the ones that never do change. We ought to commit ourselves as American citizens to do the same thing that all of our major religions teach us, promote peace and justice and equality and human rights and service and humility, those kind of things. And those are the principles that are expressed in the little book that was written about me to which you refer.
President Jimmy Carter, not just a great man, but a good man. The new book is called Gift of Peace, The Jimmy Carter Story. Mr. President, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Celeste. I've enjoyed talking to you.
We attest once again to the inner and spiritual strength of our nation. As my high school teacher, Miss Judy Coleman, used to say, we must adjust to changing times and still hold to unchanging principles.
You can hear more from President Jimmy Carter, where we talk more specifically about his life and his new book. Just head over to thetakeaway.org. I spoke with President Jimmy Carter yesterday. You can hear the full interview at thetakeaway.org. We ended our conversation by talking about his new children's book called Gift of Peace, The Jimmy Carter Story. The book follows his path in politics from a young child when he famously started out as a peanut farmer to his adult years when he ultimately became the most powerful man in the Western world. I asked President Carter if his success story seems to be out of reach for young kids today. I asked him if it would still be possible for him to become president now that it costs millions of dollars to run a successful presidential campaign.
I didn't have any money when I ran, and nobody much knew who I was. But we substituted a lot of work by me and the other members of my family, and were able to gain the goal that we established for ourselves. But I think that it shouldn't be discouraging to a young person, whether they have money or not, to begin, if they want a political career, to begin working on it. And the best way to do that is to get to know as much as possible about the people around you, starting with a small group and then expanding constantly, and in a community, and then serving others, letting people know that you're honest and fair, that you believe in justice and equality and freedom and human rights, and let your reputation grow. And then by the time you reach an adulthood stage in life, whether you decide to be a politician or teacher or professor or lawyer or whatever, then the success of your career would be fairly well established, not by how much money you have, but by the reputation that you built for yourself.
This would seem to be a particularly tough time to convince a kid that politics is a good place to be. I mean, it seems as though it feels like it's more partisan than ever before. Do you think so?
I think that this has been caused by the infusion of tremendous amounts of money into the political arena. And now with the excess of money flowing in, which I hope will be changed in the future sometimes by a Supreme Court ruling, But with the money flowing in, a lot of the money is spent during an average campaign by just trying to destroy the reputation of one's opponents through television ads and that sort of thing. So by the time the election is over, the general public and is convinced that both candidates are not worthy of support, and secondly, that two candidates, if that's just how many they are, become bitter enemies and is shaped by party principle. When I ran for president against first Gerald Ford and then Ronald Reagan, we just referred to each other by my distinguished opponent.
You know, Mr. President, this book is aimed at say, age 9, and this is, for many of them, going to be their first introduction to perhaps an in-depth look at politics, certainly your presidency. What do you think is perhaps one of the most important things we start to explain to kids about politics that may be upsetting?
Well, I think the main thing that we want to get across to the children is what a wonderful world it can be, and that the basic principles by which we shape our society never change. They're based on our religious beliefs or by just basic human morals concerning peace and justice and humility and service to others. And that even though politically they sometimes make a mistake, these underlying principles guide not only nations and societies, but also individual human beings. And in a democracy, of course, the collected opinions or decisions of individual human beings shape what the country is.
Certainly an optimistic message, and one that's in step with the message of the new book, Gift of Peace, The Jimmy Carter Story. You can hear the full interview with President Carter by visiting thetakeaway.org.